sleep.
I can't get no sleep.
Welcome to a very special edition of the West Ham Way USA podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Brawley Darbin. Obviously, it's not Tony's voice you're hearing today. Tony is like traveling. He's been all over the United States for work and stuff. So I have a special co-host with me today. It's Liam Ward from Reading all the way in England. How are you doing, Liam?
I'm all right. I certainly haven't heard Reading talked about so enthusiastically before. So it's always an interesting one. Not the most exciting place in the world, but there we go.
Well, I think people will be familiar with the recent events that's gone on in Reading. Not probably the best things to talk about right now. But so for those who have listened over the years and you hear me or Tony talk about a Liam, because there's multiple Liams in our friends West Ham group over there, or the infamous group chat that we always talk about. This is one of the Liams, and Liam, first of all, just let's start at the very beginning. Why are you a West Ham fan? Is there any particular reason?
Basically, granddad was born in East London, who I saw luckily for the first time in like 3 months the other week. And I spend a lot of my time asking him about players like Bobby Moore, Jeff Hurst, the players that obviously, you know, Trevor Brooking in his prime, the players that I never got to see. He then, again, unfortunately, passed it down to my dad. And then my dad throughout the 90s, like the Julian Dix teams, the Canio teams, I quite enjoy hearing him talk about that. And then as growing up, I had no choice who else to support. So my dad, obviously, my granddad and my dad moved to Caversham, and then which is in Reading, and then further down the line, I was born, and here I am as a long-suffering West Ham fan, which is not ideal.
Yeah, I can I feel your pain on that, because obviously we have a similar story. Growing up in two different parts of the world, we have the same story where basically we've gone about it quote unquote the right way, where, you know, you're supposed to grow up supporting the team your dad supported. I mean, that's one of the only acceptable ways of supporting a team, and without just picking a team. Now, unlike most Americans over here, where they do end up just picking a team, or they watch Green Street or something along those lines, we have unfortunately been born straight into the life of misery, and this is the life we've been given. So that's cool. So basically, I guess let's just jump right into it. We have, since we've recorded, we have played two Premier League games and two friendlies. Guess which two games we won and guess which two games we lost. Yeah, that's right. So we've lost both Premier League games, and we have won both friendlies. I don't think we need to dive into the friendlies at all. But before we get into the games, I want to touch on this with you. For those who maybe don't know, which would be most of the listeners, you are a season ticket holder home and away. Is that correct?
Correct. Okay. I'm not a season ticket holder for away, but most away games. I'd certainly travel the length and the breadth of the country for about, 10 years now. I think my first proper season going away games was Grant, which wasn't the most enjoyable season.
No.
Yeah, it certainly had some up moments in it, to be fair. But yeah, that, and then right through the Championship and then back up in sort of the second spell in the Premier League and everything that came around that. So yeah, home and away, you will certainly see me at.
So and where are you? What block are you in the London Stadium? Are you 154?
So so literally the seats Tony owns is a row behind me on the right. So I'm almost opposite his seat. So the Bobby Moore is where I reside on a match day.
And where
at most Saturday 3 o'clock.
and where your seats are actually probably one of the best. I love what the one game I've gotten to go to London Stadium. I actually quite enjoyed the view compared to other places that you could be in the stadium. That's one of the best places you could be in terms of proximity to the pitch. So I really like where you guys are at in the stadium. I think that's probably the best place to be at if you had to pick a spot in the stadium. So given that you are a season ticket holder, how does it feel to be watching on the telly every well, the last 2 weeks? How does it feel?
Can't stand it, hate it. I just think that it's difficult to get into. It's almost like watching Coronation Street or EastEnders, which might I appreciate that if the American viewers might not get that as much. It's just a bizarre experience. And I was someone that was against it restarting, basically, which I think me and you spoke about a long time ago. But it's certainly been hard to get into. But I can't tell if that's just because it's West Ham as well. I'm sure that Man City fans are quite enjoying watching them pop the ball around for 90 minutes, rather than getting smashed by absolutely everyone. So, yeah, maybe a perfect mixture of the two.
Because we definitely have shared our views on the restart. I mean, I was 100% against it. I do firmly believe that football without fans is nothing. I've really struggled to get into these games, and in fact, on the last podcast before the Premier League came back, I said to the podcast, I said, I don't know how I'm going to react to a West Ham goal. Still don't know how I'm going to react to a West Ham goal because it hasn't happened yet. But I see all these other teams scoring, and the emotion just isn't there. The same the I should have done my research on it, honestly, but the number of games going into halftime at nil-nil, I mean, it has to be astronomical. It's like every single game, there's no first half goals. They're going in at nil-nil. The place it seems like a friendly. And the players really don't seem like they care all that much, especially in the meaningless games when you're getting your Evertons who are safe playing a mid-table team like Southampton or Arsenal or someone like that. I mean, those games just don't mean anything. So I was curious to get your views on that as a season ticket holder and what it's like to watch at home, because obviously most Americans over here, we're watching at home every single week. So we don't get the same views as you guys do, but I am just quite frankly disgusted with the Premier League. I mean, I the games have been boring. The atmosphere is non-existent. I don't like watching with fake crowd noise. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. I'm still against it, and not for the reason of we're West Ham and we are in a real threat of going down. I mean, I did view it somewhat as a get out of jail free card that okay, this is going to happen. Thank God this is going to happen and we're going to be safe. But I think from a worldly perspective, I think we're rushing things way too fast for what's going on in the world right now with COVID, and they're putting money over lives, in my opinion. And I don't need to go into too much more detail, but I think the Premier League coming back was rushed and not entirely necessary. But granted, there are a lot of people who it's been something to watch on TV, and it's given them a bright spot in their lives, and people have enjoyed having something to watch. So maybe I can appreciate that a little bit. But so we'll move on. So obviously, you being a season ticket holder, me being an American, we come from two different sides of the world watching this game. But we played our first return to the Premier League. We played our first match against Wolves. But was that last Saturday? We had a 11:30 a.m. kickoff here, so it would have been what, 5:30 p.m.
4:35, 30.
Yeah, I think it was 5:30 p.m. over there. It was a 2-0 defeat. One of the worst performances I've can remember. Well, that's not true. There are there, I could think of worse
Yeah,
performances
I'll
from a
give you a
West
list
Ham
of
team,
10 if you want to
but
call me.
just an absolute bland, nothing game. I mean, let's start. Do you have anything that stands out to you from that game, off of recollection?
For the start, what the last bit of the statement that you just said, repeat that, where you basically said a bland nothing game. I'll show you 10 of those this season. It's same old story. Same old story every single time. It's almost as if I've got a theory on the whole season, which I've spoken about quite quite openly with my friends. And this game is almost a particular look at that. It's almost as if now, if our chickens have come home to roost, the years of the budget cutting, the players, there's not really a strategy. Well, we'll just get him because he's cheap, or we've heard of him, and it's all come together. And now we're gonna reap what we sow, is what I think. The game was awful, absolutely awful.
No, really, I can't remember anything positive from a West Ham perspective.
Rice maybe at centre back.
Well, yeah, Rice was good. If we were picking out players who played well, I would say Rice was our standout performer. I thought obviously Fabianski, nothing he did wrong really, and I thought Bowen looked the liveliest out of the bunch from the West Ham players' perspective. But getting into the later half, obviously first half ended 0-0. Literally nothing really happened. I mean, it felt like 22 players on the pitch sleepwalking through the game. I mean, it really felt like a meaningless friendly. My heart rate wasn't up. I mean, I never got excited or upset. It was just that first half was just absolutely nothing to it. And then all of a sudden, 73 minutes, guess who's coming onto the pitch? It's Adama Traore, and that absolutely flipped the game right on its head. The first second he got on the pitch, the game changed. And I don't know why we are incapable of, well, we, I'm David Moyes is incapable of, I mean, building a game plan or a system or anything to react to what's going on in front of him. I mean, it's just appalling. Now, Traore is tearing apart every Premier League team. It's not just
absolutely,
us.
Yeah.
But the fact that when their manager makes a substitution and brings something on to change the game, David Moyes cannot do that. He absolutely cannot react to what's going on. He has a plan A, no plan B, and there's absolutely no plan behind. There's no thinking it to me. I don't know. I mean, what are your views on David Moyes right now? And were you against him coming in to begin with, or what do you think? And I know
I actually want to start off at the Wolves point. Wolves are almost the complete opposite of a football club to West Ham.
Oh, yes.
They're almost two clubs at the complete end of the spectrum.
Yep.
That Wolves side that we saw was being built 3 years ago, 2 years ago in the Championship.
Yep.
They got Nuno in. All of the coaching staff came in. The scouting systems came in and they said, right, we're going to build a football team for Nuno, for the way he wants to play. So now 3 years down the line, you see, right, well, you know, they play with a back three. So, you know, they've got the wing backs that are quick. You know how the back three go back, they drop deeper. You know, you've got a target man that the other players play off. You've got two holding midfielders because he likes to spray the ball around. You've got Matinho and Neves, who are excellent football, excellent signings. Neves is £13 million. So why weren't we looking at a player like that?
Yeah.
Well, the answer is that's rhetorical because we both know why.
Yeah.
And that's the point I wanted to start at, because that's 4 years in the making, 3 years in the making for Nuno. Now look at West Ham. We've gone back to a manager that we deemed wasn't good enough and then brought him back in. And I actually feel sorry for Moyes, and I'm probably one of the few people that does. I mean, I don't think he should be there at all. He stinks of desperation to me. Stinks of it.
Yeah, 100%.
He's past his sell-by date, and he's desperate to get any sort of job. And I mean, it's quite telling that he didn't get any in the intermediate time.
Yeah,
Pellegrini took over, but to go back to someone like that, it just, what's the point? It's almost as what's the point? It says to me, just relegate us now. Even if we'd gone Allardyce, it was even more of a decisive decision than Moyes. It was the greyest decision in the world, because even if we'd gone Pulis, horrible football, but it'll keep you up. Even someone like Neil Warnock, Allardyce, again, those names that are horrid, it would be horrid, but it would show that they cared, that they're willing to throw the money at the situation.
Yep.
Relegation's the last thing, but to go back to someone like Moyes, where he's already come in, there's no fear factor. There's two wins now in 13? Two
yep.
wins in 14?
Yep.
There's no fear factor there. The players aren't scared of him. And I just think it is a total mess from top to bottom. A total mess.
Yeah, I mean, You said it perfectly. The fact that we're going back to a manager that we deemed unworthy and not good enough speaks volumes to me. And the fact that not a single club hired him in between him being sacked from Real Sociedad, and I can't believe he even got a job after he relegated Sunderland. There was nothing. He was sitting around doing nothing. Why wouldn't we be going after someone who maybe is being, you know, sought after, and anyone who's trying to get this person into their club, like, oh, we know him, he's cheap, let's go after him. He kept us up last time. And did he really keep us up last time? I mean, what would we finish, 14th that season? I mean, there
were some horrific
horrible
teams in that season.
Yeah,
that Swansea game where they absolutely played us off the park. I think they beat us 3-4-0. There was some horrid, but the Arsenal Cup away game where we just did nothing for 90 minutes.
And we were there.
And
yeah,
we're starting to see it more and more now. And now you look back, he doesn't have someone like Arnautović to bail him out.
Nope.
Because
exactly
Arnautović
right.
is someone that would grab the game by the horns. But this time, I think he's looking around and he can't see anything to save him. And I think we're doomed.
And,
being brutally honest.
And there's a lot of people that would agree with you. And I'm starting, and we'll probably get there later, but I will start by saying I think our only saving grace this season is that there will be three teams worse than us. And the fact that we're not in the bottom three today on, what's today, June the 27th, and we are still outside the bottom three, that blows my absolute mind. I mean, I cannot believe that we're still outside the bottom three right
Amazing.
Now.
Amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely just crazy. And like I said, I think the only way we stay up the season is if there are three teams that are worse than us. And I do genuinely think there are three teams worse than us, and we might just barely scrape by. But I mean, I could very easily see us going down. Anyway, back to Moyes. The fact that the way he sets up, we have X's show, the West Ham way, and he was talking about that the formation against Wolves was meant to be a 4-4-2 with Anderson and Antonio up front. And the fact that 90% of West Ham fans would have never guessed that was a 4-4-2, and Felipe Anderson tracking, running back in the midfield, trying to get involved in the game and just being completely invisible. I am just flabbergasted at the man's tactics. I mean, I guess at least he was quote unquote trying something different for that game, although it failed horribly.
Desperation is more of a,
yeah,
I think it's more desperation than anything.
Spot on.
But I do feel sorry for him, because if you look at it in a different way, and again, I don't really want to defend him, but he's been given a set of tools that is totally mismatched. He's got a screwdriver, no spanner, and he's got to get the car working and going. He's got the oil, but he's got no petrol for it, and he's trying to mishmash all of this different parts, and it's starting to come down from underneath him now. And I mean, if you are going into that January window, and again, this is more because of what we know how transfers happen at West Ham. We know they don't happen like a Wolves or a Leicester, where there's a plan, there's been a shortlist for years of players, a pool that have been targeted and scouted. We know that negotiations took longer than they should have done. And he hasn't had the tools in front of him quickly enough to at least get something working.
Yeah, and the owners weren't even planning on buying anything in January until those results towards the end of December started going against us. So what does that say?
I think we leave the owners a whole separate part, because that is such a big, big topic. But again, in talking about Moyes personally, none of it's been good enough. We're at a situation now where I feel a bit sorry for him, but something's got to work quite quickly, because otherwise we're doomed. And talking about the formation, I didn't even know there was 11 players out on the pitch, let alone
it's true.
4-4-2.
Yep.
But at the very least, I expect of any professional footballer, is you run about and you get involved. to see players like Anderson ducking out of challenges. Even if Creswell had got sent off against Traore because he's outpaced him, he's tried to go past him, Creswell's gone through it. Do you know what? I'd much rather see that than people jogging, people jogging back, not really looking interested. And it's just, it all feeds, this is the biggest problem we have, it all feeds into one place, which is obviously the GSB topic that we will cover. But it all leads back there. Every single part of this football club that is wrong, it leads back to one place. And it's horrible. Like I do not enjoy watching football. Haven't done for the past 4 years.
Yeah,
I've probably enjoyed one season out of 10. Unlike other people, I didn't actually enjoy the Championship. And because you go down to the Championship, you're everyone's cup final, you're their biggest game. And you go to all these places and everyone goes, oh yeah, Doncaster away is a laugh. It's not a laugh when you get beat 1-0. And my favourite memories are away at Spurs, Chelsea, Arsenal, United. They're my memories. When you go to places like Reading, Rotherham, where they're all laughing and they beat Hull and they've beaten you, and it's just such a mess, isn't it? Probably.
Yes, it is. And to go back to David Moyes briefly again, he only used two subs against Wolves. He used two subs against Tottenham, and we'll get there. We'll get to that game. But I can't for the life of me figure out how you have five players that you can bring on, and you are 1-0, 2-0 down, and your answer is to bring on Manuel Lanzini, and in the Wolves case, Andrei Yarmolenko, and then in the Spurs game, you bring on Lanzini and Anderson, who literally offer nothing going forward. I mean, I think I can see Yarmolenko coming on because he's got something about him. At least if he gets the ball in the area, he's dangerous and he can score. Lanzini, we haven't seen that in a long, long time. And Anderson, quite frankly, I mean, I've defended Anderson for the last season coming up to now. And Anderson is one of the most appalling players I've ever seen put on a West Ham shirt these past going back even earlier in the season. I thought Moyes was really going to get him going, and he just absolutely hasn't. But Anderson has been the most appalling player that I've seen put on a West Ham shirt in quite some time with his effort that he's put forward the last couple of games. And I just can't believe, like, you know, me and you, we would go out there and we would die for this club. I would be exhausted after 10 minutes, but I would run my ass off for this club. I mean, I would die.
Someone's we're going to go through someone, aren't we, Paulie? Whether we stay on that pitch for 2 minutes or not, we certainly would give it everything we had.
I would die out there on that pitch. And the fact that these players are just divas and they're picking up their wage checks, 150, 100 grand a week, and going home and just calling it a day, like, oh, that I don't really care whether we win or lose. I mean, that's what it seems like out there. There's only a handful of players that I can pick out after week in, week out, and say I think they gave it their all, and it's not many of them, and it's quite sad. So, did you have anything you wanted to add about the Wolves game before we moved on?
I want to add something to your point, right?
Sure, go ahead.
I was talking about this with my mate Piercy the other day, right? Mm. So you look at absolutely what you said. I could not agree anymore, right? You go look at Sheffield United right now. Okay, they've had a bad couple of results, right? We know that. And you go through that team of 11 and compare it to West Ham, right? If you look at the players they bought, they would have scouted. Chris Wilder is someone that has absolute control of that club.
Yep.
A huge amount of influence over scouting. So when he's gone and bought a player, that's because he knows the personality type. He knows they're up for a scrap. If we'd been linked to half of the players or half of the players that they had, we would have been scoffy.
Yep.
Why are we even interested? Twitter would be going mental. But because they have a proper scouting network, they look into the players, the personality types. They know how hard they want to work. He's got a system. They all work for each other, and that's why they've been pretty much tearing up the league this year for Sheffield United. Then you compare that to a system where, is he cheap? Oh, I've heard of him. He sounds good. Oh, that agent said we can probably do a deal there. You don't know what that player's like. And I guarantee you half of these players will go on to other clubs that we have at the moment if we go down. And we will all be saying on Twitter, there'll be a highlight going through of them at a game, and we'll be going, why couldn't they do that week in, week out for West Ham? because they will be scouted properly for teams after that, and maybe abroad, may still be in this country, and then that's when we'll see the best of them. But at the moment, with West Ham, that's why we're getting these problems where you look at players, okay, they're not up for it. They look like they want to be on a beach somewhere. They don't want to be involved in
And
this.
you're spot on with it. To go back to the simplest of analogies, I mean, we're full of square pegs and round holes, and it doesn't make any sense. I mean, we're playing Antonio as a striker, and granted, he scored a few goals up there, but how on earth did we let Andy Carroll, Lucas Perez, Chicharito, I know I'm missing another one, another forward that we've let go. Lucas Perez. How on earth have we sold four strikers or released four strikers and only bought two, and one of them can't even get a run-in of games? He's apparently so unrated by both Pellegrini and Moyes. And then we have Sebastian Allaire, never been injured a day in his life. All of a sudden, he can't get a run-in of two games with West Ham. He played both preseason games or both friendly games and picked up an injury. And then I think if I had to go through our lineup or our whole squad, I would say we have four or five number 10s. That preferred position would be at number 10. I would say Lanzini, Anderson, Fornals, Wilshere. Although we've never played him as a 10. You could probably throw Yarmolenko's more out wider striker. But and then we have three or four defensive midfielders that want to play in the same spot, and Rice, Noble, Suchek. Although Suchek does like to get forward a little bit, and that is the one of the few bright spots this season is Suchek. I really like the look of Suchek. And then we're playing Wilshere down there too. And then we go to our wingback situation. Absolutely horrible, horrible, horrible investment in our wingbacks. I mean, Pablo Zabaleta, great guy. I actually liked the signing a little bit when we first did it, but it was never your long-term plan. Ryan Fredericks, maybe we're looking at something young from the championship. That hasn't worked out. Arthur Masuaku is an absolute joke of a footballer. I was a fan of his from his first season, and he has been nothing short of horrendous these past two seasons. Aaron Cresswell's passed it. I mean, and then at least a center back, we invested in Issa Diop. I think that's a good and solid investment. I'm okay with that. Angelo Ogbonna, okay, fine. I'm okay with that. But the one solid thing we have going for us is Fabianski and Rice. Everything else, in my opinion, can go. Fornals might be a good investment down the road. I think in two or three seasons we're going to...
Did we need him?
No, not at the time.
Well, if you sat down in the summer, looking at it from a real vague point of view, we could have said we need a box-to-box midfielder, we need two new fullbacks, and we need maybe one or two strikers. So where are these players come from? Who has said, actually, we need a number 10 again, we're going to sell all the strikers, bring in one maybe. Defence looks okay, even though conceded a horrendous amount of the season before. Fullbacks needed replacing after Bilic left.
Yeah,
I could have told you that. But and again, even the stuff, everything that you have said, and I've taken note of it, leads back to one place. And it's almost even players getting injured, training ground, not been up to scratch. It all leads to one play, and we both know where that is.
So let's wrap up the Wolves game. So Traore comes on, plays an absolute diamond of a cross, beats Cresswell, and then Jimenez heads home one of his easier finishes of the year. Still a great finish, by the way. And then their second goal, was it Traore again down the wing with the cross into Nuno?
Then, Neto.
Neto, yep. Neto, and with the Neto, absolute worldie. What a fucking goal that was.
Do you know what? I've enjoyed watching so many other teams beat us. Yeah, just think, bloody hell, that was quality.
Yeah.
Again, carbon copy. You knew what they were going to do. They could have sent Moyes a letter the week before telling him they were going to bring on Traore at some point and beat the fullback. And here we are talking about stupid goals that were conceded by that way.
So we lose 2-0. Our first game back, just not a good display at all. Then we move on. We play 3 days later. We're playing Tottenham Hotspur away at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. A game that, for some reason, I saw a lot of optimism around. And there's only one reason that we go in. I shouldn't say one reason, but one of the main factors of West Ham United going away to Tottenham and playing well usually are those 3,000 West Ham fans in the corner spurring us on, and we don't have them anymore. I firmly believe that the crowds play big factors in game. I firmly believe that.
I think it's been proven. I think.
Oh, 100%. Look at the results. Look at how many away wins have been going on.
I know.
But I couldn't for the life of me figure out why West Ham fans were starting to get optimistic for this game. Yeah, we have a history.
I don't understand how anyone could be optimistic about any game.
Yeah,
that
100%. 100%.
Honestly, it genuinely amazes me that people think that. I put this on record. I can see us not winning another game till the end of this season.
That wouldn't shock
genuinely,
me.
Genuinely. I said this in the summer. I said this would happen in the summer. I've got it on a WhatsApp group. I think I've sent you the screenshots.
Sure,
everyone's going with Sandana. I said, we are in big trouble this year.
I predicted us to finish eighth.
Yeah, and a lot of people did, and I can see why the optimism. And this game is almost a carbon copy of. It seems like we have two games that we play this year: one where we play well, and one where we don't. And even when we play well, we seem to get beat. And this was basically that. They didn't have to get out of second gear. They knocked the ball around a bit. We hit the post because Bowen tries hard, but there was nothing there. I couldn't tell you what we were trying to do.
No, me either.
Bar sit deeper. I couldn't say, oh, well, we're trying to get Antonio on the ball there. And there was nothing. Set pieces wise this year, also, on a side note, absolutely disgusting. I am disgusted.
100%. Mark Noble took one or two free kicks and hit the first man both times. It's like, why is Mark Noble standing over a dead ball? I don't get
that, and throw-ins. I went to Everton away on that half-12 kickoff earlier in the season, and we did not throw one ball to one of our players the whole game. Going back to the Spurs game, just horrendous what they scored. The goal that deflected off Sujek and went in, and people were up at VAR. Nah. Why do you care? Like, we shouldn't be relying on stuff like VAR.
Nope.
Bad luck. You are a professional. You get yourself up from the ground.
We were losing that game with or without VAR in that game. It didn't matter to me.
Yeah. A Harry Kane chance that they missed.
Yep. Their goal that was offside.
Yeah.
Which
was a great finish.
Yeah, great finish. Great goal. So, I mean, the writing was on the wall the whole game from them. And not to cut you off, but I did want to go back to something you were saying, that you had no idea what we were doing in any Moyes game. I have no idea what he's set out to do or what he's trying to do. And Tony put out a great tweet last week or after the Spurs game, I don't remember, but this team has absolutely no identity whatsoever. And I don't firmly believe that you have to have a dead set identity like Sheffield United overlapping center backs or Wolves with your three at the back, and so they're going to try to beat you on the wing.
Leicester with a quick balls to Vardy. You say that, but show me a successful team without one at the moment.
No, you're probably right.
I'll tell you ones with. You look at Wolves, Leicester. You look at even now Everton with a 4-4-2 that Ancelotti's tried to turn around.
Man United even have started to build that identity.
You look at the gegenpress of Liverpool, the Pep Guardiola City, you even go down to the Championship, you look at Bielsa Ball, see what they're doing. Teams without identity float. I'll give you the drift. Newcastle, Bournemouth don't have an identity anymore ever since they basically just bought a load of foreign players.
Yep.
Us. I mean, I tell you what, Norwich is probably the only one with identity that is not, the fast attacking football that just hasn't worked out.
And fair play. I mean, honestly, fair play to Norwich and Daniel Farke from sticking with it and not giving up on his identity, and where easily they could have and sacked him and brought in someone new and try to get him out of it. But they said, no, this is how we play.
Exactly. And to be honest, I'd much rather go down like that, head held high, players that wanted to be there.
They didn't think they would stay up the season anyway.
No, they spent next to no enough money. And yeah, just again, just going back to the Spurs game, it's just the same old story. I'm almost sick of talking about, sick, tired of even getting angry. They battered us without getting out of second gear. People cry, "Oh well, he played well. He played well." It's not good enough anymore. We're in the last chance saloon. It doesn't. None of that really matters. Allardyce was the king at that. It doesn't matter who plays well. You get the result. Get you. I think not. Yeah.
With Allardyce, you did know what you were getting. You 100% knew what you were getting. The only game that I can recall where we really didn't know what we were getting was Spurs away when we played that false nine. I mean, I've never seen that formation played by Sam Allardyce before that. And what do you know? We came out with 3 points. And then I think we went on to play it in like the next three games after that and lost all three handily. And so that was swiftly, swiftly shot down. But I mean, I would have gone back to Sam Allardyce and say, "Hey, how much do you want?" I don't think he wants to come back for the owners. I think he said that. He doesn't want to work for the owners anymore. But I would have at least, and maybe they did. I don't know. I don't know factually that they didn't approach him, but I think he's been on TalkSport and he would have said that he was approached. I do believe that. And I would have said, "What do you want? If these owners were so worried about going down, and they would have paid X amount of money, let's get him back in. I know we're not going down when he comes in." I mean, that would have been the logical, and I would have been okay with that, honest to God. And I despised Sam Allardyce at the end of his West Ham tenure, and you know, looking back on it, I was probably a little harsh to do so. The football was horrendous. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. It was
Oh,
an
God.
absolutely disgusting brand of football. But if these owners can't, if the London Stadium and the Championship does not work, does not compute, then that would have been your answer to me. And I know we're jumping all over the place, going from it's going into the game, out of the game, into the game, out of the game. So I apologize to the listeners for that. But I think it's I've been a really good conversation, and there's definitely more to come. Let's finish up on the Spurs game. So there was that offside goal by Heung-min Son. I was actually watching the game in my home pub, the Amsterdam Tavern. Social distancing is in effect there, people. So you are required to wear a mask when you're in there, and then the only time you can have it off is when you're taking a drink. So it was nice to get down to the pub to watch a game. I will say it was still really, really weird. I mean, to watch a game with no fans in the stands and hardly anyone inside of the pub to begin with. But when Son scored that goal, I was like, "Well, that's the game." I was saying right before that happened, from 42nd minute on, "Not now, West Ham. Not now, West Ham. Not now, West Ham. Let's get into halftime, nil-nil, and just get in at nil-nil and talk about it." And you know, the second that goal goes in, well, I said, "Well, fuck's sake, that's the game." I was getting ready to walk out and go home, honestly. And then what do you know? The little purple bubble pops up that says VAR, check in progress, and I said, "Well, I'll be damned. We might actually get a break off of VAR for once. We might." And we did. And I was saying, there was quite a few Spurs fans in there, and I was just saying, "Oh, VAR, I've always loved you. Don't ever let me say otherwise. I've always loved you." And so we go into halftime, nil-nil. Then, as you referred to earlier, that Suchek own goal that came off of Gray Sanchez's arm, I think, or Lo Celso. And I didn't even see it. I mean, just the most typical West Ham way to concede, just a shocker of an own goal. No, and I don't blame Suchek at all. I mean, I don't put any blame on. And it took a deflection. It honestly did. It changed the path of the ball, and unlucky to put it in, and that was all she wrote. I mean, we weren't gonna do anything after that. Bowen did hit the post in between their first and their second, and I did think Bowen was very lively. I will say, I thought the performance was slightly better than the Wolves game. I won't say it was a ton better, but it was slightly better. I think this game, and then Harry Kane obviously scores a second, and that was all she wrote, and we lose 2-0. But the takeaways for me for this game: Fabianski, another solid game, a couple of really good saves. Declan Rice back in midfield, 9 out of 10, 8 out of 10. I have no complaints with him. And then Jarrod Bowen was really, really good up front. everyone else, I mean, Antonio ran around. I thought Noble was horrific, and I never say a bad word about Noble. And I won't. I think he is showing that he's just past it now, and it's sad to see, but I would genuinely consider giving Jack Wilshere a run out in Noble's place and give maybe Suchek or Wilshere a little more freedom to go forward. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but those are my takeaways from the game. I think it really shows how much we're missing Sebastian Allaire. Just with no striker out there and him refusing to pay a Yeti or Yarmolenko up front, Antonio's going to run around for 70, 80 minutes and then get gas. But, I mean, the major takeaway is, again, I don't know what we're doing out there. And the only thing that we're going to score from is a fluke or a piece of magic from Jared Bowen, I think, at this point. I don't know. I mean, what were your takeaways from the game?
Fabianski was okay. Good. Yeah, it'd be harsh to call him okay, to be fair. He was good. He did nothing wrong, which is fine. Rice, we know every week's going to play 8 or 9 out of 10. And I just think it's quite sad that we're relying on a championship player who spent most of his career at Hull to try and save our season.
Yep.
Just that's what it's come to now. I think he's an excellent player, don't get me wrong, but it's just getting so bad now, Bally. Well, I'm even struggling now to find positives in any of it.
There weren't many positives. I will back you up on that.
And I mean, anyone, I had a few Spurs fans WhatsApp me photos of Suchet putting the ball in the back of his own net, and to be honest, I even found it sad they were gloating against us.
Yeah.
Well, it's like that Simpsons meme, like, stop, he's already dead.
Yeah.
it's true. It's getting to that point. Not much else to put. Well, the same three players that we always talk positively about. On the Mark Noble point, I listened to Dave and X talk really well about what's happened with Mark Noble and, you know, that he is past it. And it is sad. Like, everyone can see that it's quite clearly not the ability that he once was. And like I've said before, a normal football club, this doesn't happen. Like, he has spoken himself about that. The football club cannot rely on him anymore. Like, a normal football club, he's 35, 36, so there's players already in place. There's a cycle. There's players already in place that are taking up that position. He's on the bench. He comes on in the 80th minute to help see out games. Maybe if we're losing, he comes on to try and G the players up in a normal situation. And, you know, that he will get a testimonial at the end of it again. Well, I know that he's had one and he gets a big goodbye and probably joins the coaching staff. At West Ham, he is now, the whole of the season, has been trying to put on his shoulders as a captain, and he is just tired. You can see it. I don't think he has it in him anymore.
Yeah.
And if any player is telling me that and has said it previously, I mean, I think, was it he had some comments, didn't he, that he thought that, you know, that we're going to lose the games, or, you know, it was going to be really hard or something.
It might just come down to the final day at Villa, is basically what he was alluding to. Him and Moyes both said that.
To be honest, if that's the case, send us down now.
Yeah.
I don't deserve the chance for a final game for it. If that's your attitude, go down now. Lose every game, because and that's what I mean. It's just, again, where do all these problems feed to? There's just one place why this is happening.
And it all comes back to one place, huh? One common denominator in your view, right? That the lovely GSB, right? But we did a previous recording where you were starting to cut in and out, and where you made a great point, and you said Mark Noble, even in an interview, he said, you cannot rely on me to be changing games anymore or to keep us up. You cannot be relying on a 33-year-old. I thought it was it made some people angry, and I couldn't believe it. I thought he was very well said, and it's the truth. He's spot on. We cannot rely on Mark Noble to win us games anymore single-handedly. So, it's a sad case, but it was always coming. I mean, you know, you're not getting any younger. And this day, I mean, he's done great to make it to 33 and be as effective as he is. I mean, last season he was one of our key players, I would say. and he's spot on that we can't count on him to be keeping us up. So I guess we can move ahead now. Obviously, two games, two defeats. We currently on June the 27th. We are sitting just outside the relegation zone, as I mentioned earlier, and quite frankly, that is an absolute miracle that we're not in the bottom three right now. But we are sitting on 27 points with seven games remaining. And I'm going to read off our fixture list here to end the season. So up next, we have Chelsea at home. On Wednesday, July the 1st, we play Chelsea. It's going to be a very tough game. They just took down Man City. That's going to be a tough game. After that, we have the two games that I was supposed to be over there in April for, which breaks my heart. It is absolutely gutting. But we're Newcastle away, Burnley at home, and then Norwich away, Watford at home, Man United away, Aston Villa at home. And if you talk to non-West Ham fans that are fans of the Premier League, they would look at that and say, "Wow, we've got a really easy run-in coming up. We should definitely be staying up." And I've heard several fans tell me that in comfort, like, "Oh, you guys with your fixtures coming up, you guys should be fine and be well safe by that Aston Villa game at the end of the season." And for the life of me, I can't understand why they're saying that. Now, I do understand that they're not West Ham fans. They don't really understand how terrible we've been. I mean, we have been so I think we've been the worst looking side in the Premier League since the return to play. Maybe Sheffield United has been as bad. But I mean, at least they kept a clean sheet and they were robbed against Aston Villa. I mean, Norwich were a given. I think they're down. They're down and dusted. But the way we look, I mean, I can't see us picking up many points from these seven games. I mean, and you said it. You said, "I don't know that we're going to win a single game out of those seven." Can you give us, if we go game by game, so if we go Chelsea at home on Wednesday, what are you thinking? Definite loss?
Lose 2-1.
Okay.
It'd be similar to the Villa game that they played them. I think we'll go 1-0 ahead, and they'll just come back and blow us away.
Hey, at least we get a goal. That'll be nice to see a goal
Yeah,
and
it'd
a
be
goal
nice,
to put
wouldn't
us
it?
in the
Maybe
league.
2-0.
And then we go to one of the more intriguing fixtures, I think, from the last games, Newcastle away. I mean, Newcastle have been quite brilliant since we've come back to play. And they've got a FA Cup quarterfinal coming up against
Yep,
Man City.
and I think you need to look at the Newcastle situation as Steve Bruce is trying to save his job.
Maybe so.
So in normal terms, they'd be on the beach, but the guy is quite literally, and you listen to the comments he talks in interviews, and he's trying to pick himself up. He is trying to convince, well, whoever's, if it goes through, for them to give him a load of money and build a side under his name. So it's not going to be an easy game, and it's not like we've got an amazing record up there. So I'll probably go loss.
Yeah, okay, so another defeat. I will mimic your Chelsea result. I think we'll definitely lose there. And then the Newcastle game, I don't know, man. That's so tough to say. I would like to say win. I'm going to be optimistic and go draw away at Newcastle. And speaking of Newcastle, Andy Carroll has signed a new one-year deal at Newcastle that'll bring him through to the end of the 2021 season. So you're still on 0 points. I'm at 1 point. And then we have the
But just sorry,
Burnley.
broadly, just
Yep.
quickly on the Newcastle game.
Yep.
Did you watch the game when they played us at home? What we lost 3-2, didn't we?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it
But
was 3-0, but somehow we got two back. But yeah, the Zabaleta Saint-Maximin game.
I mean, remembering that is probably more of the reason why I feel like we're going to lose because they absolutely. It could have been five or six at half time.
Oh,
It
I
was.
thought it could have been 7 or 8.
Yeah. Oh, it was.
It
They
was.
played us off the park.
If they looked like Barcelona, that Saint-Maximin, and I've said it, I think he's a hell of a player, and I thought we should have been in for him, and I didn't know much about him, but I thought that was someone that we could have been looking at. But the fact that was still the Pellegrini game, I believe. But Pellegrini put Zab. That was the straw that broke the camel's back for me. I was really dumb with Pellegrini there. That he played Pablo Zabaleta against Alan Saint-Maximin, and I don't even want to relive that game. That was one of the most. I think me and Tony recorded the show the second the final whistle blew, and it was me and him screaming, and it was mostly me screaming into the microphone for an hour and a half. I mean, my blood was boiling. So yeah, I don't blame you for having that stuck in your head, because quite frankly, it was still stuck in mine. I was at the Newcastle home game. That's the one game at the London Stadium I've been to, two seasons ago, when, Arnautovic scored to put us ahead, and then they scored three unanswered, and then I think Andre Ayew scored one late to make it 3-2. I think it was 3-2 as well.
That, yeah.
Good day out. I mean, I had a great time with you and the boys at the Supporters Club. We had a good time. But anyway, next game we have is Burnley at home. And this game is where the shit really starts to hit the fan, because Burnley are going to be on the beach, I think. I don't know if Sean Dyche will let players go onto the beach early. I don't know, but that's a game if we lose, I am really, really, really starting to think we will be going down. And again, I think the only reason if we lose that game and stay up is if Villa, Bournemouth, and Norwich all lose the rest of their games out and we somehow get lucky. I mean, I think we might see a new record low points stay safe this year. Usually it used to be 40. 40 was that line that you could say. And then recently it's starting to drift towards 36, 35, 36.
Yeah.
This season, I think you might see 31, 32,
33. Potentially. It wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all. And that would be, if we lose this game, that would be the only reason I can see us staying up. So again, I know it's three games down the road. What do you think? Home game against Burnley, mid-table Burnley.
Draw.
Okay, well, that's... I'll take... I would... I don't know. I probably won't take that. I would say that's a game that we must win. And so I'm going to say that we do. I'm going to be optimistic. I'm normally not an optimist. So I'm going to say we win that game. We're going to win that game 2-1. So that puts you on 1 point through three games. And then that's me on four. Then we go on to what really, really, really could be the game of the season up to that point. And that's Norwich away. And I don't think Norwich are going to roll over for anyone. I really don't believe that. And I think that this is a game that we very well could not be up for and go up there and lose handily. That game scares the living shit out of me. I mean, out of all of those fixtures, Chelsea doesn't worry me. Newcastle, not really. Burnley, not really. Norwich, that game stands out to me like none other, besides the final day at Aston Villa. What are your thoughts on that? I'm going to Carrow Road on Saturday, July the 11th, and it's a 6:30. It's an early start, so it'll be a lunchtime kickoff over there.
I could not agree with you more. I mean, we lost to Cardiff last year away 2-0, and they got relegated.
That was such a bad. That's one of the worst games I've ever seen.
Yeah, that and one. We went up for that. The problem is, I don't want to keep going through this and then saying losses and everyone goes, it's been negative, or have a bit of optimism, because the reason why is just going to... It will be explained later. Generally, you think we'll lose that probably as well. And look at those results. The list of results called out. I'm pretty sure the majority of people listening to this podcast would tell me that they can see each of those results happening.
Yeah. I don't think anyone can argue with you, really. I mean, that run of results would sum up our season. I mean, right there.
Yeah.
You're saying loss, draw, loss. I mean, that's our season pretty much. So we're both going for a defeat at away to Norwich. And I still think they're going to be down regardless. I mean, that'll be a kick to them.
Yeah. Oh,
but
yeah,
100%, I still think they're down. And then we have another very interesting game, and that's Watford at home. Watford could be safe by then. I don't think Watford are going down. I've never really thought that.
Never.
They were horrific early in the season. I mean, they truly were horrendous. And the fact that they changed managers twice this season, that the Watford-isms really, really annoy me. I mean, the fact, like, who the hell do they think they are, is changing managers every 3 months? I mean, that really annoys me, but it works. They seem to stay up, and I think Nigel Pearson is a not a sexy appointment, but I think he's a guy that's going to keep him in the division, and someone who really, really is up for a fight and will make sure everyone on that pitch is up for a fight. So I'm going to let you – what do you? Is this another defeat coming for West Ham? And that, by the way, this is on Wednesday, July the 15th at 2 p.m. Central Time.
It's now at the point where I think a lot also depends on, not to be too intricate into us literally just trying to do a small prediction segment. All depends on what's happening, because maybe if they're safe by then, I can see us winning that game. But then again, we've got an awful recent record against Watford. I know we beat them earlier away in the season, but last season they beat us at London Stadium as well. And then there's been a lot of away wins within that fixture.
Yeah.
For
and,
us,
and they were a different team when we beat them earlier this season. They were a very different team.
Oh, absolutely. So I'm going to go for a win, just like a 1-0 horrid, horrid win.
Like when 1-0 horrid wins come to mind, I want to say it was the last season at or was Sam Allardyce still in charge? I remember Diafra Sakho scoring like in the 88th minute against Sunderland at home.
What? Yeah, I remember that.
That was a horrific game of football. I think that's going to be the type of game. I think that was still Allardyce. I want to say that was an Allardyce game.
I think it was. I remember one against Swansea at home where Coyote scored, and we did nothing for the whole game. and Tony was at that game, and me and Tony genuinely ended up at the bar for, I'd say, 80 minutes of the whole game, went out, watched Coyote score and come back in, and we just literally was like cheering and went straight back to the bar, and that was it. I remember a game, that Swansea game at home a couple of years ago now reminds me of that. That's what it would be like if we did a horrible win.
I like your optimism there. So anyway, let's just skip the Man United game and let's just skip ahead to the final game of the season. My question to you, if you have your crystal ball and you can pull it out right now, would you say that the loser of this game, does this game decide the final relegation place at the end of the season?
No. I think we'll be already done by then. I genuinely do. I do not to be like an overly negative. I just don't. It's almost weird that people have this thing that, like, it's almost going to be like a playoff game, like stuff that you'll be more familiar with within American sports, because I don't really watch American sports, but from what I know, a lot of it's decided like that.
Yeah.
Why people think that is genuinely beyond me. That. And it might be the case that actually is, but I genuinely think one of the either us or Villa will already be gone by then. It reminds me of Grant when we had Sunderland at home, Wigan away, and then I think we had Villa at home the game before, Blackburn at home, and people like last three games are like, we've got Sunderland at home last game this season, that's the game for us to stay up. We end up losing, I think, all of them. I think maybe a point at home to Blackburn. I know we lost to Villa before,
and we started really well against Wigan, didn't we? Didn't we take the lead against Wigan?
So I was there. Yeah, I was there. Denver Barr, one of my favourite games. I'm not gutted has left. I never got over. Weirdly enough, yeah. Well, genuinely, a striker that at the moment we're screaming for is Denver Barr, and we never actually ever replaced. We never replaced him.
No,
whatever. Someone that actually just consistently put the ball in the back of the net. And that's the thing with the Villa game, that it will be either us or them. One of us will already be down by then.
Not to go back to Demba Ba real quickly, probably the best striker that we've ever had under the Gold Sullivan and Brady era. I would say, Arnautovic, but we didn't buy him as a striker, so.
Yeah, maybe the only, and they got him from Hoffenheim, I think.
Yep, and it was Hoffenheim.
How on earth they pulled that out? But in typical West Ham fashion, we went down. It was all too late.
Yeah.
How many times are we going to say again?
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, it's fine. I totally agree. I mean, I feel like Tony may is more optimistic than I suppose. So having Tony on might have been quite a nice, like uplifting, like
Yeah,
counter.
he definitely would be a little more optimistic. He would be just as upset as us and disappointed, but I think he would have given one or two more wins in there probably than you and me.
But even to try and predict that Villa game, that I don't know if mentally, if it say fine for argument's sake, it does go down to that. I do not think that squad is mentally strong enough to play 90 minutes
I
under
totally
those
agree. I couldn't agree anymore.
to have the season on the line. It is England.
There's
England's a
not enough
prime example.
bollocks in that team to be up for that
No,
game.
of course, of course. And like you look at England, Iceland, where everything
Oh,
changed with
God, yeah.
England, from the side then to the side now. That
2016
the
Euros.
players talked about it. The 2016 Euros, they talk about it. They said, as soon as they went behind, as soon as they went into the games, they already saw the headlines in their head. They knew that it was England going out of another tournament in disgrace. Early doors, England are going home. I can see something similar that they already. It's almost like they're playing as they know what's going to happen.
Yep.
This massively, well, in quote unquote, massively expensive West Ham side with loads of talent that people can't understand how is they already know in their head, which is disgusting because they haven't brought someone in that can change that mindset around. But it's almost as if they already know what's going to happen. And I think, like, again, I want to always. Well, I always quote back to West Ham Way podcast because the information they get is obviously top notch.
Yep.
They've got a lot of inside knowledge. And I think Dave said this week that one of the ex-players said that why have they got Moyes back in? He's an absolute joke. If someone is telling you that within that industry, if one person was telling me that, if I was trying to hire someone for a job and one person was telling me that, that's it. Right, let's go have a look at them. What are they like? What are they like? No, I'm not looking at, well, he's the cheap option. I'm looking at, okay, the full picture.
Yep.
I do not, and again, we are going to lead on to this, by the way. We're building up a lovely suspense. And we are going to lead on to it. But that is the whole point. They do not care. They absolutely do not care. And I'm convinced of it. And it's the Mike Ashley effect. Do you, if anyone thinks that Mike Ashley cares about any of the managers that he's hired, it's to fulfill almost a space that, yeah, well, he's either cheap, not going to cost much, or we know that his agent or whatever. And that's the way I again, and we'll go referring back to that Villa game specifically. They're not mentally strong enough. To be honest, and Villa don't look great. I can almost see it as a draw, like a nil-nil draw. They'll be both of them will be terrified.
Can you imagine that? I mean, that would be the most West Ham way we could go down and be relegated is with a nil-nil draw at home to Aston Villa.
It'd be the cherry on top of an awful 2020. But I'll refer back to a game that you will. I'd be amazed if pretty much anyone remembers it. Reading played QPR on, I think, what, 2013? Ari Redknapp was in charge of QPR. Reading had, God knows, whoever in charge, right? And basically, one team had to win. One of those teams had to win to stay in the league. Do you know what the result was?
Nil-nil.
Yeah, both got relegated. That is exactly the sort of thing that I'm talking about. It's not like it's a like an outlandish opinion that I have. That's my opinion, and I think we're on the same wavelength there.
Yeah.
I think somebody within this race is going to have to get it by the like out of the teams that are in the swamp are going to have to try and drag themselves out, and whoever does it first will be fine, and could just leave the other two for dead. So all it takes is three results,
Yeah.
and everyone else, and the other two are bang in trouble.
And I think the most likely of the three between us, Bournemouth and Aston Villa to get out of it, I think it would be Bournemouth. Don't get me wrong, I think they've been diabolical. I think they've been horrendous, but I think they have some of the players that have what it take to get out of it, and more so than us or Aston Villa. So if any of those three teams are going to get themselves out of it, I think it's going to be Bournemouth, and we might be left for
Funnily
dead.
enough, I was going to say the same thing. I was
Yeah.
going to say the exact same thing. And I mean, Bournemouth's next game is Newcastle at home.
Yep.
They don't have it, but to be fair, even though we're saying that, right? I'm going to read out Bournemouth's fixtures for you.
Sure.
They've got Newcastle at home on the 1st of July. They've got Man United away. They've got Spurs at home, Leicester at home, Man City away,
Wow.
Southampton at home, and Everton away.
They might not
And
have. Woo. Though
it's not.
that's a really,
Oh,
really
God.
tough. That's a horrendous way to end the season.
It's not. I mean, even if you look at Villa, right?
And
So
Villa play
Villa have got
Liverpool,
Liverpool.
and I could see them winning
Then
that
they've got.
game.
It all. I mean, if Liverpool are on the beach, but then if Liverpool on the flip side is saying, actually, we want to chase a record points
Let's
title,
hope that's the case.
and it wouldn't put it past Klopp. They've then got Man United at home if they're chasing Champions League. Man United, Palace at home, Everton away, Arsenal at home, and then West Ham away. Villa, for me, out of the fixtures available, probably look like the only ones that might be able to do it.
Well, from a neutral
Are they?
perspective, that if they looked at our fixtures, they would say we would be the ones, and that's what everyone is saying right now. That's I have all these people telling me, "Oh, your fixtures are good, you guys will be fine," and when in actuality, it's I don't know. So,
Certainly.
anyway, we can move on. I think that was a good discussion. So, end of story. You think we'll be down? I think do you think West Ham are going down on audio record? Are you saying West Ham are going down? Yes, okay.
I'm sorry. And I've said that in the summer, and I've said it all the way through the year, and I'll say it right now. Fully, 1,000%. I think we've gone.
I think we're going to just about stay up. So I think out of the and I will say I totally see a draw on the last day, so I'm with you on that. And Man United, I think Man United are playing some great stuff, so I think we'll lose that game. So I think I was giving us 5 points out of the final games, and that would
32 if we're on 27.
and 32 points. I think that, as I was saying before, very well might be the line. So we'll see. It's gonna be a tight one. I think I said this on my last show, but I put some money on West Ham to finish in the top 10 just for fun. But yeah, now that looks like and I knew it would be a total waste of money, but it was like a $15 bet to pay out $2,265, something like that. So I said, why not? But yeah, so I think we just barely scrape out of it, and we'll see. But anyway, let's move on. Something we've been leading up to this whole time is the owners, and I want to get your thoughts as someone who goes home and away. Firstly, I want you to go back in your memory and take us through the move from Upton Park into the London Stadium, and we don't have to dwell on it too long because everyone knows, but I want to get your perspective on it as someone who goes week in and week out, and then your views totally when you get into a more thorough discussion about the owners.
To lead up, we'll start at the last season, the Upton Park, which genuinely, and I mean this, was some of the best times of my life going to football. And then the Everton game 2-0, that it almost as if it was a league that just, like, we finished above Liverpool, Chelsea that year. Like, it was just a lovely time to be watching football. We had a player that everyone was talking about. We were beating, like, everyone. We beat Chelsea, like Liverpool. Like, it was so much fun. And I remember coming into the end of that season with genuine optimism, which I now almost feel ashamed of. I genuinely do. I genuinely almost feel ashamed, and it's quite sickening, really, that I believe that we would be moving on to something. And maybe I let myself believe, but I'd seen the taste of it. It was almost the worst time to have that season, because I think if we hadn't had that season, and maybe we'd had a season like this, that everyone would be up in arms. Well, what's the point? Nothing's changing. But because we tasted something. At one point, we were looking at the Champions League, and it was like, this is what it could be like. I mean, now looking back, it will never happen under their tenure, ever. And I mean that, I can say that on podcast. It will never ever happen under with these owners. But at that point in time, like, it was a fluke. if you look at the season, it was a fluke because Leicester won it. Everyone else was out of touch. It was the perfect storm. And I remember leaving Upton Park and just thinking, with emotional stuff like that, for me, it doesn't resonate to a long time after anyway. I don't feel stuff like at the time. It's sure. almost further down the line. It's like a delayed reaction. And at the time, I was like, what if it was like this, where I was going to support West Ham and, all right, we were going to European away days and we were going to places like Anfield and winning. We were going to the Emirates and winning, and it was a lot, and it was actually fun because it's something that had never been gone hand in hand with the football club I love. Wasn't fun. It wasn't. It's never really been that fun. It's a lie if anyone tells you that they enjoy it. It's a different sort of love. It's different. But that one glimmer was like, it might just be like this. Actually, might work. But they might have just fluked it and got it right. Mm-hmm. And this is what it could be like. And then very, very, very quickly, it all started falling apart within a typical West Ham fashion. And it almost upsets me that we hear, like, people put it down to, like, oh, it's just West Ham. It's always the way it has been. Why is it? Why does it have to be like this? I can name you clubs. Wolves were in League One.
Yep.
They've gone further to the depths than us. They're now fighting for the Champions League. And they're not fighting the Champions League like we were, where it had been like an off season. There has been a series of progression, season on season, and players, and it's got to this point. Us was just a mad season. Whereas it doesn't, and it kind of brings it, and I will talk about the owners, and I just want to talk about the move and then the owners. And that's something that I'm quite keen that you know, all of my older West Ham friends, my dad, my granddad, well, this is West Ham. And I now sit here and now I'm starting to just think, but why does it have to be like this? Why does it that we have to scrap for relegation every year? Why does it we have to sometimes be good, sometimes be awful, that this happens to our players, that, well, that deal would always fall through and we just missed out on that player. And it's I'm genuinely sick and tired of it, because, like, if you talk to anyone, I don't want us to win the league every year. That's unrealistic. But it is not unrealistic because we are seeing other football clubs. Leicester are an example of that as well. Mm. We're seeing other football clubs time and time again overtake us from quite literally every single angle. So I was at Leicester away in the Championship on a Monday night when we just missed out. I think we had to win and then beat Hull and hope that Southampton lost to, like, Coventry, yep. and I think they flunked them 4-0. And I was there in the Championship on a Monday night. We beat them 2-1. There's about 15,000 people there. There's 2,500 West Ham fans. And if you had come to me at the time and said, Leicester were going to be one of the teams in England, I would just told you to fuck off there and then shut up. But that goes to show the ineptitude and the sheer incompetence at the running of this football club.
Yeah.
Because all of the teams that I am ringing out to you, even Sheffield United, we have had head starts on for a number of different years. Over and over again, we have been ahead of.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to bring this back to the owners. We look at what is happening right now. Everyone else has overtaken us. We're in a dire situation with the training ground, the scouting department, the manager, the players, the stadium, the badge, the actual image of the club has been wrecked.
Yeah.
The finances, they've been charging interest on those loans, which almost everything is in tatters. And I'm now, the more I talk, the more emotional I get, the more angry I get. But I always will go back to, but why does it have to be like this? So you're sat listening to this podcast and go, oh, it's always been like that. Everything in life has always been that. I've always had that job. You would try and change it.
Yeah.
Because where is that coming from? If you can see it's not working, you try and change it. That's with anything, right? That's with relationships, job, etc. So as this football club, hence why me and my mate Piercy have gone to the protest. We've signed up to Hammers United. We are trying to change it. And this is something that me and Tony have disagreed on. He is, well, they're not going to sell.
Yep.
I'm not asking for them to sell. I'm asking them now to suffer. I want us to go down. And people go, what? Because you want them to sell the club straight away. You know, we'll be in the Championship. It's rather been the Premier League. So, no, that's what they want you to say to yourself to stop you rising up in, you know, not particularly like ripping it down like the French Revolution or anything, but you rising up and going, actually, no, this is not acceptable for a football club. You need to get out of there. That is what my opinion on this situation is. And I would rather us go down and for them to suffer, because it will hurt a lot more for them than it will us. Do not ever let them kid you that it won't. Because if we are down there, they're losing money, image. They aren't want to be known as... They are people that came from an industry that, you know, a country where basically they were ridiculed. Oh, you know, you can't get into that industry. It's like porn. That's where they made their money. It became massive new money. Everyone, you know, then started going into football, and you had all of the, you know, the billionaire owners and the foreign owners and the people that have done it for years and knew it the right way, and they said, well, you can't do that, and it became about that. And I understand why they got into it, but looking at this particular situation, put it simply, if we go down, it makes no difference to me. I will go and watch West Ham on a Saturday. It has, at the moment, under their tenure, nothing will change. Do not ever kid yourself that things will change. So nothing will change. So if we stay in the Premier League, all that's going to happen is this. It might not happen next year. The cycle will come back round where the players, the same thing happens with the players, the manager, they'll get another wrong move, and it will come back to this point. There's no scouting department, training ground's awful, etc., stadium, etc. It will just happen again. Nothing will change. The only drastic change to almost bleed the club and cleanse it is to get relegated. And that, for me, is the only viable solution that maybe not even to get them to sell, for them to suffer as much as we are. Because I think it's very difficult to suffer when you're making hundreds of millions off TV money, with interest off the loans that they're making, all sorts. And that is my opinion on it. And people... You don't support West Ham, that, you know, you want us to go down. That's not West Ham. That's not West Ham to you, but that's West Ham to me. West Ham to me is a club that I actually, on the field, could be proud of us. And the 05-06 team is such a perfect example of that.
Mm-hmm.
It was rebuilt out of the dying embers of what happened when it went relegated. It came back up. It wasn't the most glamorous team in that league. Got to an FA Cup final. It was some of the best times I had watching West Ham, and I was so young, and that's how, you know, it helped me progress in falling in love with the club. And there's nothing to say that can't happen again. And again, me and Andy have spoken about this before, where he's so convinced, and I've always normally agreed with him, that a rebuild, you don't have to get relegated to rebuild. You can do it in the summer. And every time I was like, Andy, that's so... And it's the one time, now looking at it, where I think it's wrong. I don't think we can rebuild under these owners in the Premier League. I think they need a shock to the system, and they need to suffer as much as we suffer.
I mean, I know you're saying the fans definitely don't deserve relegation. I mean, I think that's where a lot of people confuse the two lines. Is like, well, we don't deserve to go down. We don't want to go down, but you want them to suffer every bit as much as we have over their tenure. And the only way to do that, if for them to feel this, any similar level to pain as we felt when we left our spiritual home, is to go down. That's what you're saying. So. It's tough, man. And this is a very sensitive subject for many, many, many people. And I'm going to go back to, was it the Hammers United or Irons United? The protest of this season.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't. I was kind of on team Tony. Originally, I was siding with Tony until in our group chat you laid it out so clearly, and it really made me open my eyes to the fact that even though the outcome, even though we might not get the desired outcome, which ultimately would be them selling, and that's the side Tony lies on as well. Nothing's going to change, so why would I even bother with that? We can still voice our opinion and at least make them uncomfortable and make the world see that we are pissed off and upset about that. And then we can apply every little bit of pressure to them that's humanly possible, even though it might not happen, even though the outcome that we want may not come, that we're still going to make our voices heard. And I've taken that approach on life now a lot. And, you know, we have things like Black Lives Matter going on and other protests that, you know, I may have just brushed off like, well, nothing's going to change, so why would I get involved? And now I feel like I'm older and wise enough that this year, really, 2019, 2020, has really made me grow up and really appreciate that view. And I'm totally with you. I mean, I am with you on the board. Yep. I mean, it might not happen, but I'm going to make sure my voice is heard. So
that's the whole thing, is that if it burns, we all burn.
Yeah.
There's no point in it, us suffering and looking at it such a short term. Like, and to be honest, I ask people what, like, actually one of the things that Counter Tony spoke about really well is that I said, you know, why don't you care if we go down here? Because, well, we watch Premier League football. That's my only access to Premier League football.
Yep.
Is on the telly. It's so easy. If we go down, that's a nightmare for me to watch West Ham games. And that made me think that actually, hang on.
And that is my biggest thing with going down. I would lose all of my access to watching the games, apart from maybe one, probably three or four times a year we would get to watch West Ham over here.
And then it goes back to the point then. Then fine, if that's what it takes for us all to suffer.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. Doncaster at home with 30,000 people, with 30,000 empty seats, then on a Tuesday night, it's not something that... I know that's a relationship we share with the club. It's something that naturally, actually, me, you, Tony, would want to watch that, and I understand that. But it then becomes to the point where it's the short-term suffering for the long-term gain, because you already are starting to see the cracks show. If you look at that Sunday supplement, some of the supplement messages they sent out was genuinely bizarre. I have never, I don't think enough was made of it.
Yeah, because you're right. I've
never seen Mike Ashley do that, or even like anyone of any upper management or ownership do anything like that to go against. And it's almost not even to write like a column from them and just that says that, you know, fair play, you think this, we think this, to try and push an opinion down people's throat of, actually, we spent this amount of money, we did this with the training ground, you're all wrong, having this, you're doing it, is astonishing. Like, and then it comes to, what is their view of us as fans? Because you then have certain websites that have very, very close links with that football club. They've all fallen, by the way. Most of the ones that stayed with them in the early, they have all fallen.
And we won't name them, but we all know who we're talking about.
We all know who they are. And I spoke to you about an article the other day where certain people were critical of certain other people's opinion, and they defended them. It's like, well, I'd be more than happy if someone wanted to talk to an opinion with me about why they actually think these guys are good for the football. I'm more than happy to discuss that. Yeah. But I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to say, well, actually, you're totally wrong, and I'm going to force this down your throat. This is my opinion, which, again, you don't have to agree with it. But to try and have like a smear campaign against people that doubt them is, number one, ridiculous as a concept, and number two, one of the most stupid things I've ever seen someone do, because it's almost like getting the petrol out and just throwing it straight on the fire, because they're giving the whole thing, more ammunition. And you see it again, you've spoken about the Black Lives Matter, the amount of ammunition that when the police were spraying these people and stuff, that actually became ammunition back into the movement, and it was just put right back into the movement. And the crowds got bigger and they got angrier because it's that sort of thing. It's the stupidity and the ignorance of who they are dealing with. And these are like the people who I've spoken to, aren't happy, and you can't underestimate that.
And
That's
you can
it's
really,
now.
sorry, not to cut you off, but you
No,
can relate,
go on, go on.
you can relate a lot of what you're talking about to today's society and what's going on here in the United States, as you mentioned. I mean, I feel a lot of parallels with what's going on at the top of our club and the top of my country. And it's very sad. It's very disheartening in these times. And I think you speak very well. And I'll let you continue to go on with your point of what you were saying. But I just wanted to say there are a lot of parallels with what's going on right now in today's society, in today's world.
Yeah, and again, it's I'm trying to actively understand the other side of the argument. I want people to tell me that, because I've got the arguments in my head, right? Like, they saved us. What's the other? Well, actually, they've invested a lot of money in the club. Well, they spent this on this at Diop. They spent that on Haller. And to take, you can almost just ring them off like bit by bit. And I've never really heard opinions that go past the counter argument because, the first one, they saved us. That's like saying that's anyone could have said that. That's irrelevant. They bought a club, they invested money, and they purchased something. That's not saving something.
Right.
That's just like that's completely different. And to say that is like, well, yeah, we could have gone into administration. Southampton went into administration. Wolves went into administration. All of these clubs have gone into administration. That, yeah, it's horrible for to own people money and the staff to get cut. But it's not, the club doesn't, well, even if it did, fine. Okay, the most extreme argument, they went into liquidation. But then AFC Wimbledon are now in the same league as MK Dons. And that, excuse me, so that as an argument, fine, maybe there are more counter arguments. I've never heard it. What's the other one I always talk about is the invested money. It's like if you went out and spent 100 grand on a Ford Focus and said, I've just spent 100 grand on a new car, it's one of the best cars in it. And I said, well, that's a Ford Focus. And I said, how did you find that Ford Focus? He went, someone told me it was really good for 100 grand. I wouldn't go, do you know what, mate? That's amazing that you've spent 100 grand on a Ford Focus. Well done. I'd say, well, why didn't you think to spend a lot less money on a car that's possibly a lot better, if not almost certainly a lot better? Again, I don't really understand that to throw out arguments. They spent 60 million and 40 million in even going away from things like net spend and stuff. I don't understand why that's something to be proud of. Ruben Neves cost £13 million. Jamie Maddison cost 20 million. I'll give you so many different more examples of value for money. Saint-Maximin was 20 million. We paid 45 for Lepe Anderson. Like, what are you trying to tell me with that they have money? Go then to things like they talk about their investment in the training ground. We've both spoken about the start of this. I live in Reading, right? So they said they spent £10 million, I think it was, over 10 years on a training ground. I live in My gym is right next to Reading's new training ground. It cost them £60 million to make.
Wow.
So we have a training ground that a championship club spent six times more on, pretty much in one go.
That's opens your eyes, doesn't it?
It does. And then people go, it's Pellegrini's fault.
I don't
I'm
think so.
sorry. I know Daywalker is probably the only time with Daywalker I've ever disagreed with. I genuinely, I feel like our opinions kind of line up fairly well. And he said, the club have been had on by Pellegrini, that he was, he was a winner. If you look at his career, it doesn't scream to you winner. That Man City team is like Chelsea. Evran Grant finished second, and where Chelsea got to a Champions League final. It
yeah,
doesn't make
any manager could have won the league with that Man City team. I firmly believe, and looking back on that now, I do firmly believe that.
And not only that, but he did well at Malaga, but in Spain, and it doesn't really equate. So if you then look at the Man City situation, well, Liverpool should have won it that year. And yeah, he won it. He got the trophy. That's fine. But it doesn't. The club haven't been had on. The club knew what they were getting into.
Yeah.
And if, do you know, they did it, and I'll tell you why they did it, is because a name to any, you know, to, so it almost is like this.
It was a lazy appointment. It was a
Jason Cundy spot on. It was.
Yeah. Absolutely lazy.
And it's because that they wanted West Ham fans, when they complained, to go, well, we've got a Premier League, someone to turn back and go counter back to West Ham fans. They said, well, you know, we've got Pellegrini in charge, it's not going well at some point. For them to go, well, he's won a Premier League, what more do you want? That, it's almost like that is what they wanted. It was never about building something, because if you wanted to build something, you would have had a network in place.
Yep.
This is what people don't understand. And I think X said, Dave said that actually they wanted him to finish in Europa League and then the club for someone else to take over to be in a lot better place. No. That's not how it works. If that was the case, there would have been a state-of-the-art training ground. The academy would have been spruced up. There would be a scouting team. There'd be a director of football. There would have been a whole network in place for that to happen. If that the manager is in modern-day football comes after that now. It doesn't become before that the manager now fits in the model with the club. So to go and get someone that out of China that
who's already picking up a wage packet. Yep.
The alarm bells are ringing from the start of that. And then we're now, again, come back to the point of that's why they've done it. And it is so upsetting. And I honestly don't understand how some people are, even some journalists that will write spot. I do not understand how they can call themselves journalists. Or scrap that. I don't understand how they can call themselves West Ham fans and are sat and not as angry. Anger will come out in different ways. It doesn't mean angry in the sense of you have to go and you're the one throwing coins on the pitch or GSP out. I'm not talking about just the pure, raw emotion of anger towards what has happened at the club. And if you do not feel that anger, I'm sorry, then you do not, like, are not in love with the club anywhere near as much as you thought. And Tony is one of the most passionate people, the most, genuinely, out of West Ham fans I've met, one of the most passionate about West Ham that I've met. And it's not that he's not angry. He just sees the end result as different. So Tony...
And we will, and it's not fair that he's not here to defend himself right now. And we will eventually get all three of us on. And I would love to. I think we will. Hopefully, the next show we'll get to have you both on together and get to debate it back and forth. But did you have anything else you wanted to add?
I mean, I
know you could go for hours, but I think we're pushing it a little long.
I don't want it to become like a waffling session because. Yeah. It's a subject that's emotive and close to my heart, so naturally, I feel a huge amount around it.
Yep, and I think you're gonna a lot of, if not most of, West Ham fans will really relate to this discussion that we've had, and they can feel the passion coming out of your veins right now, and. It's sad what we are becoming and what we have become. And I hope to God that you are wrong and that we can build something out of the Premier League. And I'm starting to see that might not be the case. And I think you make some really good arguments. And I think that is a great place to end, this week's show. I really appreciate you guys tuning in this week. Liam, thank you so much for joining us on this week's episode. People, if you guys want to follow Liam on Twitter, follow him at Ward Liam. So that's at WARDLIAM. Like I've said before, he's a season ticket holder. He, as you guys can tell, he's very, very passionate about the club that we all love so much. And that'll just about do it this week, guys. If you want to follow me on Twitter, you can follow at Brawley Darbin. If you want to follow the podcast on Twitter, that's at West Ham Way US Pod. If you guys would please, please, please go on to iTunes, leave us a 5-star rating and write a nice review for us. We really would appreciate it. And other than that, Tony should be back next week. And we, like I said, we will get Tony on with Liam so they can have this debate and go back and forth with each other. But until then, hopefully we're coming to you after a resounding West Ham victory and we do the double over Chelsea. And we're all in La La Land again. But until then, guys, be safe, be lucky, and we'll see you next week. See ya.
Cheers. Thanks for having me.
Yep.